doing things that we've always done just because we've done them. And so we get kind of stuck in this. And one of the things that I've shared years ago is the idea of risk. What does that mean? What do people perceive it as? A lot of people perceive risk as dangerous, right? It's something that can really be hurtful to our kids, something that might not be beneficial in the long term. And how I define risk is moving from a comfortable average in pursuit of an unknown better. So that idea of just kind of doing something just because we've done it doesn't necessarily mean it's good.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast.
Welcome to the Digital to Learn podcast. I'm Tiffany Snyder, and I've been told that I can't forget to introduce my co-host, Brad Garner. Welcome, Brad.
I don't think I want to respond to that.
You always set me up. I try to set you up one time, and you can't even take it.
Hello.
We are back for week two with George Kuros, and welcome back, George.
Hey, thanks for having me back another week.
So let's shift a little bit from innovations to innovators. Do you think everyone has the potential to be an innovator?
Yep, 100%. I think more people are innovators than they actually give themselves credit for. So when I talk about the notion of innovation, I just talk about it as like focusing on new and better ways of learning. And so the notion of better is more important than the notion of new. When you talk about new, it could be like an iteration or invention. So you look at a teacher in a classroom, right? So the reason I define it that way, and I think it's really important to kind of see why that definition is important. A lot of educators will see themselves, well, I'm not really good with technology, so how am I an innovator? Because they connect innovation to technology, like they just use it. And that's actually the fault of education in many ways. And I'll give you an example of this. So how many times have you seen the ed tech lead become the innovation person, right? Or the IT department now becomes the innovation department in schools. So why isn't it the curriculum team? Like, why isn't the curriculum person becomes innovation? We just say like, oh, this actually sounds better than technology, so let's call it that. But it should be the curriculum people. It should actually be that. And it should be like a connection of the two, to be honest with you, right? So we have actually kind of facilitated that, not intentionally, but I think that, you know, through some of our actions, we're like innovation and technology are the same thing. And I actually will outright say technology accelerates everything, including bad practice. And the example I always give, and it gets some people really mad, is Scantrons. So Scantrons, and I can give you an example again from my own practice. So you think of a Scantron, right? It's beneficially multiple choice tests. I don't get a grade, I just throw it in a machine. So when I was teaching high school, we got a Scantron and boom, every single test I did, all of a sudden went multiple choice. I'm like, nah, I don't have to grade anything. It's not actually about deep learning for the kids. It's about what was the easiest way for me to grade, right? And so that technology enabled that bad practice. I had someone come up to you like, well, I use Scantrons and I do some really beneficial multiple choice questions. And I'm not doubting that's true. There is a possibility in that. But I know specifically for my practice, and let's not pretend anyone listening to this that I'm like unique here, that once I got a Scantron, I was like, nah, I'm out. Let's make my job easier, yeah. Right? And so that was what it did for me, is like, it was all about ease. It wasn't about assessing, by the way, it was about how could I grade, which is not necessarily the same thing as assessment, that actually enabled that. So going back to your question of like every teacher being an innovator, I think it is really kind of, what does that actually mean? So you take a teacher in grade one who uses no technology at all, and they have this kid who struggles with reading in their classroom, right? And every grade one teacher listening to this will actually see themselves in this picture. So they have this kid who struggles with reading. And so I went to college, I did this, I learned these strategies, but none of them are working. Like nothing is working with this kid that I have learned. So you can say, well, I guess this kid's never gonna learn to read, which would suck for the kid, right? It doesn't make you really a great teacher. Or you could say, okay, well, none of this is working. I got to figure something else out. Maybe I'm going to try this. Maybe I'm going to do this. If I just tweak this practice, will this work? Which is an iteration, right? Which leads to something better. Or like, well, I've tried the tweaking, none of that's working. So I'm going to do something totally different, which is invention. Now people start seeing themselves like, oh, I actually do innovate in how I teach reading. Oh, I do innovate in how we're doing our professional learning a lot different than other places, because we saw it wasn't working for our staff. They hated it. They would show up to auditoriums on the day we'd have a speaker. They'd sit as far away as possible because they assumed it would suck. So how do we create it where people are actually busting in to our professional learning days the way we want our kids busting into our classrooms? So now you start seeing yourself in that picture. And then once you start seeing that you are actually that innovator, then it becomes that. But the connection with innovation and technology has been so pushed on people that people that are not really comfortable with technology then actually see themselves out of that picture, even though they are creating practices with their kids in front of them that are actually leading them to be able to do certain things that they couldn't do before without that teacher's involvement in changing a practice. That one of the things that I've always struggled with is someone saying, well, no, everything has to be based on best practice. I'm like, well, we can learn from best practice, but every best practice, everything that we've ever deemed as best practice was once an innovation. Somebody said, hey, what we're doing is not working. So let's do this thing instead. They would do that thing over and over again. And then it was like, oh, this works fantastic. It wasn't like that was like years and years prior. But no thing, even that we deem best practice, works for every single kid. So if you say to me, hey, we started this reading program, we found it works for 90% of kids. So then my first question is, what are you doing for the other 10%? Or like you just said, 90 is good enough. So then you have to start saying like, hey, then maybe we have to tweak this. We have to adjust to this and kind of connect some different dots here. Not only do I believe that, you have to get people to see how they are already doing that in some elements of their practice and how we actually be more intentional of doing that in different elements. So like, can technology be a part of innovation? Absolutely. Like we have opportunities now that we're embracing, you know, we're talking over Zoom. You saw a lot of teachers, you actually saw a lot of educators that like a lot of people listening to this right now, they all have a colleague and COVID happened. And that colleague was like, I will never use technology ever in my life. Like I hate technology. It sucks, blah, blah, blah. Right. And then all of a sudden that teacher's on Zoom doing this, blah, 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 with like no coaxing. Right. And the reality of it is, and this is what I always kind of point to, is that did the teacher really hate technology or did they not see the benefit of it at the time? And then all of a sudden their kids are not in classrooms and they're like, well, I got to connect with these kids. I have to learn this opportunity. I have to figure out how to utilize this stuff. And they figured out, and then they say like, wow, I can't believe this person is like finally using technology. And so instead of saying, oh, I can't believe this person is using this, it's like, how come we couldn't convince them before a pandemic? Maybe it was partly that we didn't show relevance and why it was actually beneficial, because that teacher, when push came to shove, they would do what's best for their kids, but we never really showed how some of these technologies can actually benefit student learning. So when a principal says, oh, my teachers, they don't move forward, I'm like, maybe that's a you problem. Like, why are you blaming them? Like, your job is to lead. So then maybe we should say, okay, maybe the things you're saying, because you're saying them louder, is not really helping. Maybe you need to think of a different way to lead, to get them to embrace it. Because if you're a leader and you're complaining about the people not moving forward, then maybe it's you. Right? That's your job, is literally to lead them forward. So it's kind of like looking at some of those elements. And so I think it is kind of like really understanding people's motivations or understanding, but also getting them to see themselves in that picture. And I think a lot of people, when I share that message, they're like, yeah, I do that all the time. And then they start being more intentional about it. We created some of that problem where it's like, no, if you don't use tech, you're not innovative.
Mm-hmm. So I think your model makes people responsible for what they themselves are doing. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, it promotes the idea that, hey, we can do this better and I can make that happen.
That is the focus, right? It is kind of looking at this. And we were talking about the notion of tradition. And one of my favorite quotes ever, I will not take credit from it, but it's like an internet meme, is tradition is peer pressure from dead people. And I absolutely love that quote. I think it's hilarious, right? So people are like, oh, like tradition is like, we're honoring. I'm not saying it's a joke, like calm down. Okay. So like it is kind of, but it's like meant to get people to actually think, right? So I'm not against tradition. I am not against tradition. And one of the examples I always use, I tell stories all of the time. In my keynotes, when I speak to people, this is one of the things probably from D2L. We tell a lot of stories about our family, things like this to make points, right? Storytelling is literally the oldest practice in teaching and learning. So like it is a very traditional practice. Still use it to this day. So I'm not against tradition. What I am against is actually doing things that we've always done just because we've done them. And so we get kind of stuck in this. And one of the things that I've shared years ago is the idea of risk. What does that mean? What do people perceive it as? A lot of people perceive risk as dangerous, right? It's something that could really be hurtful to our kids, or something that might not be beneficial in the long term. And how I define risk is moving from a comfortable average in pursuit of an unknown better. So that idea of just kind of doing something just because we've done it doesn't necessarily mean it's good. So think about this in your personal lives, and people will connect with this that are listening to this podcast. So anyone listening right now, think about a time, have you ever been in a relationship like way too long? And if you're, maybe it's right now, like who knows, right? And the question I always ask is like, why did you stay, right? And you stayed because it's what you knew, right? I'm the first one. I can say I've done that. I'm sure you both have. And kind of thinking about this too. And then you leave that relationship. And then years later, like, oh, why did I waste so much time with that? Like, why did I do that? When you're like out of it, you start thinking differently. And so you probably stay because, you know, it's just what you knew. And it's like kind of like a pain to like, you know, move my stuff and all this other thing, right? And so you do this. And so then take that same idea with teaching. Do we actually do stuff in our classroom that we see is not working really well for our kids and just continue to do it because that's what we're most comfortable with? So going back to the idea of the 10 things every month, I could have kept doing that because it was easy for me, right? I'm super comfortable with technology, but I looked at it, I'm like, oh, this is not working. So like, I got to figure out something different with my practice. So I did take a risk in trying something new, but it wasn't much of a risk because what I was doing that was old wasn't working. So I think that's part of it too, is getting people to see risk taking is not like standing on the top of buildings and, you know, hoping you don't fall off. It's moving to that new space because what you're doing right now might not be working that well. Like I said, you know, people get really, really bothered by the traditional quote. And I like to throw in those jolts that people, you know, kind of make people uncomfortable, make them think. But you look at schools that focus tremendously on collaboration, and all they talk about is collaboration. But then the first thing I see when I walk in is the individual awards that have been up there for the last 35 years. And it's like, what do you recognize as important and what do you say is important and why is your disconnect? But why did we leave the trophy case up? Because, you know, it was up there 35 years ago and we're not taking that down. Then talk about, it's all about individual achievement. Just do that then, because that's what you're saying when people walk in, right? But it's just like, we don't even question those things.
Absolutely.
It's a neat example. I don't want to forget to be able to ask you, I need you to take a risk now and predict something for the future,
right.
Which you've told me there's zero risk involved because it's 100% going to come.
It is 100%. 100%. I think that, you know, I've been asked this question a million times, and anyone listening to this, if you're thinking like 5-6 years ago, would you have predicted COVID and all the stuff that was happening, right? And if you did, you probably had some like horrible thing part in it. I don't know. Like if you yeah, predicted it, it was probably you planned it. I don't know. So like nobody, you know, obviously that's a joke, conspiracy joke, but nobody predicted that, right? And so people had to adapt, do whatever. But let's go back even further. So did we predict Chromebooks in classrooms where every kid would have a device or an iPad, things like that? No. So what I know is that you can ask me this question and I actually have the answer. I don't know, and neither do you, and neither does anyone listening to this. Mm-hmm. And so what I think is really important is that what we develop in our kids and ourselves is an ability that no matter what comes our way, we will figure it out. And if you can actually develop that in your kids, it doesn't matter what comes next. That's the thing, right? And a lot of people that, the one thing I will say about technology that maybe is lending to innovators a little bit is technology changes on the fly all of the time. So you just have to adapt. You have to figure stuff out. I've been in the middle of sessions on tools that I've been teaching for years and years and years that I'm like in front of people and I go to the platform and it's totally has a redesign and I have to teach it. to the group. And so I'm just sitting there pressing buttons, figuring stuff out on the fly in front of that group. And I have no discomfort for that, because that is how you learn. That's how you, like, and I always share the analogy is like, my mom is very comfortable with technology because she never lost a willingness to push buttons, right? A lot of adults have lost that willingness. They're like, no. And it's not that they're bad with technology. They just don't like learning. And there's a difference between the two, right? So like, once I have to start pressing buttons and figuring stuff out, I'm out. I don't want to do that. And it's like, well, kids aren't better at technology than adults. Kids are just more willing to push buttons to see what happens.
That's true.
When you're actually kind of looking at this stuff, whatever happens in the future, I know personally, and this is what I'm trying to develop in my own children. This is kind of the theme of the work that I do with educators, to not only develop this in our students, but really importantly in developing ourselves, is that whatever comes our way, we will figure it out. And you saw schools around the world do that, right? They figured out, and maybe not as ideal, but I think a lot of people have taken this, and I don't know where you are in Indiana with kids being in school, mask, no mask. I don't know any of that stuff. But I think what is a little bit scary to me is that people are looking at this time in education as, how do we just get through this so we can go back to what we were doing before? That's probably more scary to me than anything, as opposed to, okay, well, this thing happened and we actually learned a lot of things. How do we actually, when we come out on the other side of this, make sure everything's way better than what it was before? Some kids actually thrived in remote learning situations. And why is that? Because they were actually encouraged to use devices they weren't allowed to use 2 months earlier in their classroom. They were like, do not bring that device. Do not bring that phone. Do not bring that laptop. Do not bring that in here, right? And it's like a month later, it's like, hey, make sure you have a laptop because we're doing this all on Zoom. You have to use this. And so they're like, oh, now I finally get to use this. And I've always said this, that if you have a kid with paper that thrives using paper and pencil in a classroom and you take that away from them, I'd be just as bothered if you had a kid who has a device that thrives with it and you take it away. Like, whatever the kid needs to use is where we need to like begin and kind of think about that. So ultimately, I know my prediction's not really a prediction, but it is an expectation, is that we always are having that ability to figure out whatever comes our way, we'll figure it out and we'll actually become better because of it. That has always been my focus, because nobody can predict what's coming in their way. But I know that's the best way for me, is that I'll be okay. I'll figure it out. And that's what I'm going to instill in my kids. That's why I hope to instill the people I work with.
And what a great educational system it would be if every student who walked across the stage and got that diploma would say, I can figure this out, or we can figure this out together.
That is the hope, right? And that is, you know, the people that have done well in schools right now in overwhelmingly tough circumstances, they figured this stuff out. They figured things out. They figured out new opportunities. They're becoming better from it. And I think a lot of people, and this is kind of that notion of innovation, one of the nicest things I've had said about my books is they're pandemic proof. And that was like the nicest thing, because it was like, wow, all this stuff totally applies to what we're going through right now, because it was about figuring out, how do you deal with change? How do you deal with stuff just being thrown in your face and actually come out better on the other side? Which is like, you know, kind of made me feel good to the kind of how to win friends and influence people reference, is that even through those tough times, the messages still resonate. And because that's what we're trying to develop.
This reminds me of another historical anecdote. I went to my 50th high school reunion. And as you think back on high school, think about kids you went to school with who were the academic rock stars, top 10 GPA, president of this, leader of that, whatever those things might be. 50 years later, I look at those same people and they've had good lives, but they clearly have not lived up to the expectations that we all had for them when we were in high school. And then I look at other people who were just kind of invisible in high school, who somehow have figured out how to do the things that make people successful. So I'm not sure we're really measuring or thinking about those skills necessarily, as opposed to following the rules, getting the right answers, doing the things the teachers want you to do.
Yeah. And that, like, the whole premise of innovating outside the box, that idea is that there's always going to be constraints that we work in, right? So one of the constraints that we hear about all the time is like, well, we have standardized testing. I am very adamant that I will never go into, especially, you know, being from Canada, where standardized testing is not as predominant as it is in the United States, and saying to a group of teachers, don't worry about the test, and saying that and then leaving, going back to Canada, and then they all lose their jobs a year later, right? And they're like, oh, you know, we're going to have to move to Canada now. So like, I will never say that. I'll say like, hey, there is a reality. You still have to do this, right? Like that is your job. That's part of your job. There is an expectation. Those things are there. I think what I talk about, the notion of innovation, so that is one of the constraints. Let's identify this as one of the constraints that we actually work with. Let's continuously push to make our systems better for our kids, for our adults, for that. But if you develop kids as really good test takers, that doesn't mean they're great learners. But if I develop these kids as really great learners, they'll be fine on the test. And it's like kind of looking at that a little bit differently, right? Because like, you have kids who know stuff really well on the test, but don't really have a deep understanding of it. They don't really have a context to it. They don't know how to apply it outside of their context, right? And so like that makes the adults look really good. It makes us look good to the public because look at the scores, but then it doesn't really help our kids. And so why are we here? Like what is the purpose of this? So it's really kind of like, you know, I understand that notion. Like we have a lot of people who are really good at school, and they do really great. And I've challenged like to really think about like, for example, like a rubrics, right? Does a rubrics actually just tell some of our kids who are really gifted academically, not necessarily our smartest students, right? Because some of the smartest students in your school suck at academics. They're different skills. It's like academics is really what we have deemed important. But then there's all these skills outside of school that necessarily aren't necessarily in academia that are really valuable and important. I have a master's degree and I have a bachelor of science and a bachelor of education plus a master's. So I have like 3 university degrees, right? So then you have a plumber come to my house to fix my stuff who doesn't have the same level of education that I do. I'm telling you, in that moment, that person is the smartest person in my house because I don't know any of that stuff that person's figuring out. I don't understand of it, but I have much more education, right? But they have gifts and abilities. And I think that's one of the things that we have to really change in school is the idea of we talk about personalized learning, but then we standardize assessment. And it's like, we want to personalize everything, but then we want you to all become the same cogs in the machine, as opposed to saying like, hey, this kid really isn't good at science. I don't believe every kid can be good at every subject. I honestly, I don't care. I just don't care. Like there's a reason I'm not good at science. And I'll tell you straight up, I don't care. That's the reason, right? But I was really good at sports. And a lot of people that are good at science weren't good at sports. And sports have helped me tremendously. And there's things that I was really good at that other people weren't good at, and vice versa. But it's like we want every kid to be good at the exact same thing. And we feel like failures if we do that, as opposed to saying like, hey, why don't we help every kid find their thing they're good at and help them develop that and really think about their time in school as something really different. Yeah. So like a kid wants to be a YouTuber in my class, but I'm teaching science. And then I can tell they don't really care about science. Can I get that kid to explain some of these science concepts, you know, making a YouTube video, which actually might help their YouTube career. And, you know, while I'm still checking that box, I'm teaching the science thing, right? So like, hey, how do I develop the kid and work the curriculum into that kid's interests and passions, as opposed to like, trying to get the kid excited about something that they're not going to care about 10 years from now. And like I said, I'm not against science. I think science is really important. And then there's other people that I point to when I look at that, but I have different gifts and skills. I did terrible in school, but I'm doing okay now. Like, and it's because I learned to figure stuff out.
And that student making the YouTube video is probably learning more about science than you could ever teach them.
Totally. And I think that's part of it too, is if you have a kid who takes, like if you take a science curriculum objective, have a kid explain that science concept and go inside out, teach it to the entire world, they'll be fine on the test, right? But then you have kids who can get 100% on a science test who cannot tell you anything about those concepts a month later. Like I wrote about this and I still like joke about this. I was terrible at science, not really interested. We had a parts of a microscope test in grade 10.
Oh my.
And I like parts of a microscope. And I'm like, okay, this isn't really science. And I can memorize this stuff, right? So like I studied that like crazy. And in my class, I remember Shelley Mirth. I remember the teacher. I'm actually friends with her. She's like, there's only 100 in class today. And it was me. And I still bring that up to my friends. I'm like, yeah, I know like you're an engineer. You remember when I was the only person to get 100% of the parts of the microscope test. Now I could use a microscope. I could not identify one of those parts of that microscope today. I have no clue. I could not tell you what is what, right? Like, I know the part you look at. I know the part you put the little cell or whatever. I know all that stuff. That's not really important. Now, if I do a video explaining maybe a microscope, I don't know, maybe there's something there too. But it's like, if you focus on memorization, it doesn't mean that the kid actually has a deep understanding of the concept. But if you focus on deep understanding, by default, they'll memorize it, right? And kind of like really looking at that deep learning of what we're doing. So that, you know, our kids can still do well on their exams, but they're seeing this is leading to something bigger than me just doing, you know, checking off school off the list of life.
George, it has been so much fun to have you with us on this podcast today.
And well, thanks for having me. I appreciate the invitation.
Well, I'm sure our listeners have lots of things to unpack and think about. So we appreciate you challenging our thinking today.
Yeah.
And the hope is if you hear something, you know, a little challenge to the people listening right now, if you want to really kind of unpack some of the stuff that I was talking about, you can listen to it, write a blog post, you know, make a video, like talk about some of the concepts and actually make your own connections to that. And I'll tell you, you'll get so much more out of this than just listening to anything I have to say. You'll have a lot better understanding of this is if you unpack this in a way that makes sense to your own connections, which is ultimately what we're trying to do as students. So just maybe a little challenge for your audience here too, because I think a lot of times I'll go to a conference, I'll listen to a speaker, and I won't go to any other sessions because I'll spend the rest of my day blogging about what the speaker said and trying to unpack and what they're doing, as opposed to going session, and then, you know, going home like, what did you learn today? Nothing. Right? Yeah, right? It's like, hey, because I'm just overwhelmed, right? And it's like, I'd rather take time to dig deep into, like, you know, one message than, you know, to hear six.
Well, thanks, George, for being with us. We sure appreciate it. I'm sure our listeners do as well.
Well, my pleasure. And thanks for having me. Thanks for the invitation.
Yeah. And to all of our listeners, you can catch links to George's books and his podcast, his blog on our website, www.digitaltolearn.com/2. And join us next week for another exciting guest. Thanks.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are three things we ask you to do. One, come back and join us again. Two, tell your friends about us. And three, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Embrace the future.
Always keep learning.